it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to On Deadline, a deep dive into a single topic from Odyssey's newsrooms across the country. Today, we're updating you on the Charlie Kirk case. His killer was caught after he was turned in by a close family member. President Donald Trump broke the news Friday morning on Fox News, and Utah police later confirmed that Tyler Robinson, 22 years old, had been booked into Utah County Jail and was believed to have acted alone. So here's what police have said so far about his motive, his actions before and after, and what the public execution of a famous man whose opinions you don't agree with means for the United States. Utah Governor Spencer Cox confirmed Friday that investigators discovered inscriptions on casings found with a bolt-action rifle near the Utah Valley University campus, where Kirk was killed. Here's the FBI announcement from Utah, carried live on WWJ News Radio in Detroit.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We got him. On the evening of September 11th, a family member of Tyler Robinson reached out to a family friend who contacted the Washington County Sheriff's Office with information that Robinson had confessed to them or implied that he had committed the incident. This information was relayed to the Utah County Sheriff's Office and scene investigators at Utah Valley University. This information was also conveyed to the FBI. Investigators reviewed additional video footage from UVU surveillance and identified Robinson arriving on UVU campus in a gray Dodge Challenger at approximately 8:29 a.m. on September 10th, in which he is observed on video in a plain maroon t-shirt, light-colored shorts, a black hat with a white logo, and light-colored shoes. When encountered in person by investigators in Washington County on September 12th, in the early morning hours, Robinson was observed in consistent clothing with those surveillance images. Investigators interviewed a family member of Robinson who stated that Robinson had become more political in recent years. The family member referenced a recent incident in which Robinson came to dinner prior to September 10th, and in the conversation with another family member, Robinson mentioned Charlie Kirk was coming to UVU. They talked about why they didn't like him and the viewpoints that he had. The family member also stated Kirk was full of hate and spreading hate. The family member also confirmed Robinson had a gray Dodge Challenger. Investigators identified an individual as the roommate of Robinson. Investigators interviewed that roommate, who stated that his roommate, referring to Robinson, made a joke on Discord. Investigators asked if he would show them the messages on Discord. He opened it and showed several messages to investigators and allowed investigators to take photos of the screen as each message was shown by Robinson's roommate. These photos consisted of various messages, including content of messages between the phone contact named Tyler with an emoji icon and Robinson's roommate's device. The content of these messages included messages affiliated with the contact Tyler, stating a need to retrieve a rifle from a drop point, leaving the rifle in a bush, messages related to visually watching the area where a rifle was left, and a message referring to having left the rifle wrapped in a towel. The messages also refer to engraving bullets and a mention of a scope and the rifle being unique. Messages from the contact Tyler also mentioned that he had changed outfits. I know there has been speculation as well as to the writing on those casings, those bullet casings, and I believe we have that as well. And I will share that with you now. So the area north of Campus Drive Road where the suspect crossed over, you saw some of that in the video that we released last night, consists of a grassy area with trees on the edge of the UVU campus. Investigators discovered a bolt-action rifle wrapped in a dark-colored towel. The rifle was determined to be a Mauser Model 98 30-06 caliber, 30-06 caliber bolt-action rifle. The rifle had a scope mounted on top of it. Investigators noted inscriptions that had been engraved on casings found with the rifle. Inscriptions on a fired casing read, "Notices, bulges, capital O-W-O, what's this?" question mark. Inscriptions on the three unfired casings read, "Hey fascist!" exclamation point, "Catch!" exclamation point, up arrow symbol, right arrow and symbol, and three down arrow symbols. A second unfired casing read, "Oh Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Chow Chow." And a third unfired casing read, "If you read this, you are gay, LMAO." We are indebted to law enforcement across the state who has worked seamlessly together, local law enforcement, state law enforcement, and our federal partners with the Federal Bureau of Investigation. We're grateful for everyone who worked together in such a short amount of time to find this person and to bring justice. I want to thank the public who has been so engaged, reviewing videos, helping us with sending in tips, and helping us get to this point. I want to thank the family members of Tyler Robinson who did the right thing in this case and were able to bring him into to law enforcement as well. I especially want to thank the family of Charlie Kirk, Erica, Charlie's parents, his children. I want us to be thinking of them as we bring justice in this case. They will be involved in that justice. We will be working very closely with them as we move through this process as well. This is a very sad day for our country, a terrible day for the state of Utah. But I'm grateful that at this moment we have an opportunity to bring closure to this very dark chapter in our nation's history. With that, I will now turn the microphone over to the director of the FBI, Kash Patel.
Thank you, Governor. This is what happens when you let good cops be cops. The FBI and our partners are proud to stand here today together to bring justice to the family of Charlie Kirk and honor his memory. I want to express my deep gratitude to President Trump, the Vice President, and the entire White House who have been so incredibly supportive with both resources and just personally to the FBI as a team. They had our backs the entire way, and I just want to express my gratitude for giving us the resources we need to operate in this space to bring this sort of justice at this sort of speed. In 33 hours, we have made historic progress for Charlie. Governor Cox, our partnership has been absolutely incredible these last few days. Our partnership will endure. Your state and local partners, your sheriffs, your DPS community has been unbelievably impressive in the hardest of times. And a case like this cannot be solved, cannot be brought without partnering with your state and local authorities. The FBI has a certain role to play, and we will play that role, and we will lead out for the federal government. But Governor Cox, we are so grateful for your state partnership that led out on this investigation. A little bit of the timeline. Charlie was shot at 12:23 p.m. on Wednesday. The first FBI agents arrived on scene in 16 minutes with chiefs of police at 12:39 and secured the scene. The FBI immediately launched fixed-wing assets. We utilized these assets to transport personnel, specialty technicians, hostage rescue teams. We also utilize these assets to go back and forth from the East Coast and here in Utah to transport forensic evidence and other evidence that will be analyzed and is being analyzed at our FBI laboratories in Quantico and other laboratories, including the ATF. At my direction, the FBI released the first set of FBI photos of the suspect at 10 a.m. local time on 9/11. Then, shortly thereafter, the FBI reward of $100,000 was released at 10:45 a.m. local. Myself and Deputy Director Bongino arrived on the scene at approximately 5:30 p.m. on 9/11. The governor led a press conference last night. at approximately 8 p.m., where at my direction, the FBI released a never-before-seen video of the suspect. We also released new images to the public of the suspect. And just last night, the suspect was taken into custody at 10 p.m. local time. In less than 36 hours, 33 to be precise, thanks to the full weight of the federal government and leading out with the partners here in the state of Utah and Governor Cox, the suspect was apprehended in a historic time period. And I want to highlight what Governor Cox said. This would not have been possible without you, the media, and you, the public. That's why we went so public, so fast, and we're so transparent, and we're committed to that transparency. The crime scene, just a little bit there. It is a large crime scene. State and local authorities, along with federal authorities, processed that crime scene quickly. And I even had the ability to walk through that crime scene and walk through the steps the suspect took to learn more about what was needed and what resources we needed to bear to create a full picture for the FBI and leadership back in Washington. Furthermore, thankfully to state and local partners, forensic evidence has been seized and continues to be garnered. Forensic evidence has already been evaluated at FBI laboratories in Quantico and state and local authorities here. We will continue to process evidence as we see it, as we collect it, and we will continue to deliver to Governor Cox and his team. Last night, we had a total of approximately 7,000 interviews, 7,000 leads. As of this morning, thanks to your great work, we have over 11,000 leads that were called in to the FBI. And we are running out every single lead that we can. Every one of those leads will be run out. When the public, who had a right to demand such an expeditious solving of an investigation, the FBI answered that call diligently, critically important to our nation, and we delivered. And I'm proud to be their leader, and I'm proud to be the director of the FBI. This is a very much an ongoing investigation, as the governor said, and we will continue to work with state and local authorities to develop the investigation, to provide them the evidence they need for their ongoing prosecutions. And we will be here to answer every call they absolutely have, as long as it takes, for as long as we need to find and apprehend whatever suspects were involved in this crime. Lastly, to my friend Charlie Kirk, rest now, brother. We have the watch, and I'll see you in Valhalla.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's more on The Presser from all-news outlet KCBS Radio in the Bay Area.
We're joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Dr. Todd Burke, criminologist and former police officer. He lectures at Radford University in Virginia. We heard there that the FBI Director Kash Patel was talking about the incredible progress they made in 33 hours. The bottom line, though, is that the suspect was turned in by somebody.
That's correct, and that's also not terribly unusual. When the public is asked for assistance, they often come through.
So what do we know about what the FBI and the state and local law enforcement did in those 33 hours?
Well, I could tell you that they did a lot of investigation, and the important part to really understand is the collaboration, the sharing of information and communication between local, state, and federal agencies. That is critical when you have an incident like this.
So they mentioned that some of the bullet casings, it was 30-06 rifle used in the, they believe used in the killing, had inscriptions on them like, hey, fascist, and things like that. What do you glean from that?
Well, those things are very important to the individual. And I say the individual, I mean the suspect in the case. And we've seen this in other cases before, and it's basically figuring that somebody is going to find them, the evidence, and hopefully be able to make that connection through law enforcement, and again, through the help of the public. And I can't stress this enough, that not only is there cooperation between law enforcement, but you have cooperation with the public and the media in this case as well.
So what do you make of the trend towards political violence these days? I mean, it's one thing to disagree with Charlie Kirk. It's another thing to shoot him while he's getting ready to speak at a university.
Well, there's many factors involved, and if anyone just comes down with one factor, that would be absolutely misleading. I mean, there's a kind of a laundry list of, you know, the whys. Why does this stuff happen? And we can look at mental health with social isolation, social media, particularly, you know, inflaming tensions, spreading of incitement, misinformation, and disinformation. Of course, we have the exposure to violence, which to be commonplace, and we're making that unfortunately normal. We have poor social and emotional skills, this lack of anger management, power and control when you're dealing with particularly political assassinations or attempted assassinations. And we can't rule out, you know, not just the access to weapons, because weapons have always kind of been around, but the quality of the weapons used in these type of assassinations. And what we need to do as a society is do a better job at recognizing all these warning signs that are out there.
There's been a lot of speculation about whether this shooter had some sort of training or not, because of the spot they picked for the shooting, the fact that there was a one shot and that was one and done. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, it sounds pretty incredible if this was just a so-called lucky shot, and there's nothing lucky about it. I mean, this is horrific. But this is someone who is familiar with the campus, familiar with the buildings, familiar with the weapons and ammunition that's used. And I'm sure as the investigation continues, and that's the important part here as well, is, you know, this is not the beginning of the investigation. This is going to be an ongoing situation. So it's not only, you know, the initial investigation at the time of the shooting, but this is going to be ongoing. And the idea of finding out the information and the questions that you're asking, which are quite valid, that has to be answered.
Todd, I'm going to make this the last question for you, but do you worry about copycats after something high profile like this?
Absolutely. And we've seen this in the past and before. So that's why it's important for the public to be in heightened awareness, not just law enforcement, and I'm speaking as a former police officer, but also, you know, on campuses, schools, everywhere. Just be aware. And of course, we also have the problem of swatting that's been going on nationwide, which is the false reporting of incidents to have law enforcement, particularly the SWAT team, respond to these incidents. So it's really taking up a lot of resources, a lot of time, and putting a lot of fear and panic in the public. But we as the public have to just make ourselves aware, and getting back to the old adage, if you see something, say something. And go beyond that, do something.
CBS's Major Garrett joined KCBS to discuss reaction to Kirk's murder and how the political climate in America has gotten so hot and deadly.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
why it's not
outside of Cleveland. You know, the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So how did politicians on both sides of the aisle respond to Charlie Kirk's assassination?
Horror, anger, disbelief, And as has happened before, and I want to underscore that this has happened before, lawmakers in both parties said we need to turn away from violence. That is a rhetorical ritual that we have for far too many instances, basically since the shooting of Gabby Giffords more than a decade ago in Arizona at a shopping mall, have been repeating. Yet the trend lines remain alarming. Political violence is not normative in America, but it is persistent. And it has casualties on both sides of the aisle, Republican and Democrat. And one of the guests we're going to have on Face the Nation, as I am lucky to substitute for Margaret Brennan this weekend, is Robert Pape, University of Chicago researcher, who has a body of research about rhetoric, about intention, and about the American mind and how it's more willing to accept political violence as a possible way to remedy our differences. These are dangerous trend lines. Charlie Kirk's public murder on a college campus in Orem, Utah, but the most horrific example of a trend line that's been with us for some time.
Normally, in situations like this, there is someone who tries to be a unifying force to lower the temperatures of both sides. We don't have that this time.
We don't. The president used a social media post this week to say radical left Democrats were directly responsible for his death and for the terrorism in America, which overlooks violence committed against Democrats in Minnesota, in California, in Pennsylvania, elsewhere. There, like I said, there have been victims of this political violence on both sides of the aisle. And one thing I can tell you that's going on in Washington right now, and I think this is alarming in terms of what it has already begun to do to the willingness of people elected to office to engage with the public, members of Congress, senators, and House members, publicly announcing the cancellation of scheduled public events. We had a member of the United States Senate, Kevin Cramer, Republican, say yesterday to reporters, I think we should think about not having any open-air events at all. I mean, that's a way of reducing public exposure to lawmakers elected to represent the public. That's a diminishment of engagement, accountability, and by its very nature, a sort of freezing of public discourse. These are the kind of decisions being made. These are the kind of conversations going on in Washington. I think the reverberations from Charlie Kirk's murder will be with us for quite some time.
Perhaps no place in America has felt the reverberations of public violence as much recently as Minneapolis. Here's the Vanita Soccer Show to talk about that.
We are chatting with Esme Murphy from WCCO-TV. Good morning, Esme. It's been a heavy week.
Another heavy week.
Another heavy week, over and over again. You know, I was some uplifting news. Sophia Forchus, the student now in serious condition. That was wonderful to hear that she's been upgraded.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, that poor child and the father who gave the statement. I mean, incredible news. Just really so comforting. Obviously, I'm sure the child has a long way to go, but what a heroic, gritty, wonderful girl to pull through. What a fighter.
Oh, my gosh. And her family and friends and that whole school community. It was really neat at the Lynx game last night. There were a bunch of the Annunciation school community students, families in the seats. So they had they had their Annunciation t-shirts.
Great.
So it was just wonderful to see them having fun and enjoying things. And it was very uplifting. Well, you know, and you just wonder, how do we keep moving on from these types of things? And just love to get your thoughts and what's been happening and how we move forward.
Yeah. It's just, what's scary, I think, Vanita, is that these things seem to kind of come in clusters. And you wonder, in this climate, somebody who's really disturbed, who looks at all this, and this is somehow used as encouragement. I mean, I think it's really, really troubling. It's really frightening. And one of the things that's so scary, frankly, is, you know, even presidential security couldn't keep President Trump or Donald Trump from being shot on the campaign trail. How do you keep this from happening? If you look at the Annunciation shooting and where that man was shooting from, where he came from, I mean, you can't tell how that person really got there. It's just sort of a hidden little area. It's really scary. It's really scary. And I know a lot of people are scared.
Absolutely. It certainly has got that feeling, that heavy, dark feeling.
Newell Normand at WWL Radio in New Orleans has more on the heavy atmosphere in the U.S. and how it's driven by our ever more divisive politics.
A lot of questions still unanswered as it relates to the perpetrator Tyler Robinson, 22-year-old white male, lives in Washington, Utah, which is down in Washington County's down in the southwest corner of Utah, about 2.5-3 hours from Salt Lake City and the university where Charlie Kirk spoke. They gave us a little bit about the timeline, what they were able to pull together. It's important to note, and Governor Spencer Cox, I thought, did an incredible job in managing this press conference. And he opened up with saying, "We got him." 33 hours later, the assets and resources of federal, state, and local government. We've actually talked about this in a different context for the last couple of weeks. This is what can happen. This is what can be accomplished. Over 7,000 tips coming in to the FBI hotline. Kash Patel said they will interview each and every one of those folks to make sure that they're not missing a single tidbit of information. Obviously, there's going to be a strong desire to find out more about Tyler Robinson. As it turns out, family members are the ones that facilitated turning him in. There was a mention that there was a confession made by Tyler Robinson to one of his family members, not to law enforcement. There's a huge difference that there was a confession made to family members that he may have been involved. There's also on the gaming platform Discord messages there. And there's a roommate that has given some information about Tyler articulating some things to him and saying that he needed to retrieve a rifle and his scope, which are unique, from a drop point, which we know that that validates what the officers actually found not far from the scene in the woods, where they came across the rifle, the scope, some cartridges. What little we know about the psyche of Tyler Robinson really comes from some conversations recounted with friends and family, that he has become more politically active, and he knew that Charlie Kirk was visiting Utah. And he knew that he was going to be presenting. He expressed his dislike for Charlie Kirk to several of friends and family members. And not much more than that, quite frankly, at this point in time. Other than that, what was written on the bullet casings, both the spent casing as well as the unspent casing, on one, it said, "Hate fascists, catch." Another one said, "Oh, Bella Ciao," which is actually a popular Italian World War II anti-fascist song. If you read this, you are gay. LMAO, laughing my ass off, on one of the other cartridges. And there was another cartridge where something was written on it. I couldn't make out exactly what they were saying, and I apologize. That's about the extent of what we know about what this individual is about. I suspect that in the coming days, both the media and investigators will begin to reveal a lot more information about who this person is. Tyler Robinson, 22 years of age, was still living with his parents, is what we were told. So, you know, it was interesting, again, Governor Spencer Cox and the way that they coordinated this. I thought everybody kept their comments very concise, to the point. didn't engage in a lot of speculation, didn't offer up a lot of salacious details, which I'm sure they're in possession of some, very mindful. The governor explained that under Utah law, they have 3 days to present a charging document in court, and he suspects that there will be more information that will be provided in that charging document, so we can anticipate to learn more probably Tuesday or Wednesday of next week with the filing of these documents in order to begin the process and get to a preliminary hearing as it relates to the criminal procedures that are laid out under state law of Utah. I'm also certain that next week we will begin to hear, if not over the weekend maybe, as they have more conversations between federal and state and local officials as to what the intentions of the federal government and the Department of Justice will be as it relates to charging Tyler Robinson with any potential federal charges. This is always a little bit of a friction point as to who's going to take the lead. This investigation is very much ongoing. As I said before, there is probably an incredibly strong desire to find out more about who Tyler Robinson is. Also, a strong desire to start digging deep on a digital footprint of this individual to see what he has been saying, posting, communicating to others leading up to this tragic event. They were able to release that he appeared on the campus in one set of clothes. They believe that he changed that set of clothes on the roof, put on the clothes that he had when he made his escape, and at some point in time after that changed back into those other clothes. They did not talk at all about a search warrant for the parents' house, search warrant for the roommate. I'm sure that's all in the process of being done. They did not reveal whether or not about how much evidence they were able to secure. And it seems as though the father, as well as a minister, helped facilitate him turning himself in. So that's where we are. What's interesting is, these folks keep referring to Charlie Kirk as a fascist. It's interesting to me because obviously a lot of these college age folks, it would be nice if they just went to the definition and then look at the way that Charlie Kirk conducts himself in order to determine whether or not that's an appropriate label for Charlie Kirk. Because it's not. He's not a fascist. In fact, to the contrary, a lot of what he actually has offered up over the years is so far removed from being a fascist, other than you might say that he falls on the political far right of the spectrum. And it ends just about there. And it's interesting when you're in the opposition, which fascism would never, fascists would never do, to express themselves, to talk about individual rights, to talk about other things such as that, that he's done on so many college campuses over the years, traveling to Cambridge, traveling to other universities in England, debating the best of the best of their students on their campuses about all of the contemporary issues that are out there. That's not the conduct of a fascist. The problem is that we're in this country, we are facing and having a real difficult time with disagreements. And if you're not intellectually ready for the game, human nature is you resort to your strength. And as if your strength is you've armed yourself, or your strength is the physicality that you have, where you have a desire to go hands on, or you know, let's take this outside because you are getting rope-a-doped intellectually. This is what happens. And this is part of what's going on in this country right now. The interesting thing And the frustrating thing, I believe, for a lot of the kids on college campuses is when they try to intellectually joust with Charlie Kirk. And remember, he was saying that universities, for the most part, for a lot of these students, is a ripoff. They're not getting the value proposition that they're paying for. When they stepped up to that mic, not ready, not able to articulate three sentences in a coherent way, they recognized, once they've embarrassed themselves, I believe, that he may be right, that we are not ready. And what little bit that we learn in school is not enough. Well, it was never going to be enough. And in defense of the universities, they'd never said that your educational experience starts and ends right there on the university campus. In fact, Charlie Kirk, to the contrary, said, every day is a learning day. Don't ever lose or miss that opportunity. It is absolutely a learning day, every day. And to be quite honest, it's one of the things that I love about what I'm doing today as a radio talk show host, more than anything else, is my exposure to so much material. I wish I could synthesize it and remember it like Charlie Kirk. I'd love to watch him in action, because he mastered being able to synthesize material, put it into an argument, utilize it in a debate to make his points and say to others, prove me wrong. Give me the data, give me the information, prove me wrong. And it was interesting because I think he really inspired a lot of students to step out of themselves and say, just going through the classes, going through the motions, getting the piece of paper at the end of 4 years, that's the bare minimum. That's not how you get the full impact of the educational experience at any 2-year, 4-year, continuing education class or otherwise. It requires work before, during, and after, in addition to what you are being provided. I think he made kids realize that the value proposition was not only the obligation of the university, but it was their obligation as well. They had a hard time accepting that reality. And Governor Spencer Cox said it well today. He said there were a lot of kids that loved Charlie Kirk. There are a lot of kids that hated Charlie Kirk for that very reason. A lot of folks have the inability to look themselves in the mirror every day critically and gain a better understanding about who they are, why they are, and what they will be, and what are their shortcomings. You never improve as a person if you don't engage in that all the time. Sometimes in different points of our life, we do it better than other times, right? Let's be honest. You've heard me talk about emotional intelligence. We don't have any in this country. Very little. The ability to handle one's own emotions and the emotions of others. The byproduct of that inability is what we see happening on the streets every single solitary day. Every single solitary day. It's not about the violence. It should never be about that. How many, almost every day in this country, on a grammar school campus, a middle school campus, or a high school campus, we have fights breaking out, conflicts breaking out there, so much so that the call to the policing community across this country is becoming overbearing. We don't know how to resolve conflict. It's a zero-sum, all-or-nothing game. I don't know where that comes from. I wish I did. I don't have that answer. But I know one thing, nothing, very little, of what we engage in life should ever be a zero-sum game, ever. Governor Spencer Cox said something else that was very interesting as well. He talked about this being an attack on the American experiment, that it's an attack on all of us, and political violence is different from all other types of violence, and he could not be more right. When we see the erosion of moral clarity in this country and what's going on and our inability to talk about it open and freely and to deal with these issues, really, really interesting.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.